Mitsubishi of Japan admits it falsified some emissions data. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's not the same order of magnitude as the Volkswagen emissions scandal, but the president of Mitsubishi Motors has apologized after admitting his company falsified emissions tests on engines. Mitsubishi made them for Nissan, which discovered the problem. Gas cars, not diesel, as was the case at VW. These were put into 470,000 cars, with which are, by American standards, teeny engines, 0.66 liters. BBC business reporter Theo Leggett follows the global automotive industry.
To put it into technical terms, Mitsubishi says it conducted testing improperly to present better fuel consumption rates than the actual rates, and that the testing method was also different from the one required by Japanese law. So yes, this is Mitsubishi, the sixth biggest car manufacturer in Japan, admitting that effectively it fiddled the figures to make them seem better than they actually were.
I'm just looking through the list of vehicles affected. I don't think any are on sale here in the U.S. The EK Wagon, the EK Space, the Days with a Z, the Days Rooks with an X. These are little tiny cars.
Yes, in America, I think you measure more by cubic inches and like large V8s. Well, these are cars that are very popular in Japan. They're only really sold in Japan. Very few get onto the overseas market.
There's some irony here that tiny little engines that you'd think would be more inherently efficient are the ones where the cheating has shown up.
Well, I think it depends how you drive them. A small engine can still use a lot of fuel if you're driving it hard and using the revs. This is the kind of thing which I think in the past we might have glossed over a little bit. The reason it's grabbing so much attention, though, is because, of course, it comes in the wake of the Volkswagen scandal. And that will feed into this whole speculation about what car manufacturers may or may not be getting away with. We'll focus attention once again, really, on whether or not international testing regimes for new cars are fit for purpose.
All right, the policy issue that arises from this. The BBC's business reporter, Theo Leggett. Thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Japan, among other countries, taxes vehicles based in part on the size of the engine, one of the reasons Mitsubishi's two-thirds of a liter engine found buyers there. By comparison, those engines have less than half the displacement of the ones in the base Mini Cooper sold in the U.S. Let's do the numbers. The 100 share index in London is down more than 0.5%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are all down 0.2%. How did Coca-Cola do during the first 3 months of this year? We will know later this morning. The previous quarter was strong for Coke, driven by non-carbonated sales, things like tea and juice. But Coca-Cola is hoping an image makeover will help sales of its core product. Nova Safo reports.
Let's face it, there are lots of different Coca-Colas.
I had one this morning, Cherry Coke Zero. It's my favorite.
The man with the sweet tooth is Bill Schmitz, consumer products analyst at Deutsche Bank. He says the idea behind Coke's new campaign is that various products will all have the same logo, that signature red circle with the Coca-Cola label. Then additional colors, black for Coke Zero, gray for Diet Coke. Schmitz says the change means Coke can simplify its message.
You know, rather than advertise all these different brands, it lets them really leverage the marketing scale and around choice.
Choice meaning?
The company is trying to communicate to the consumer that you can consume these products with no sugar.
Nick Modi is with RBS Capital Markets.
And obviously sugar has become top of mind these days with a lot of the public health community.
Which has led to a 30-year low in soda consumption. Coca-Cola's new unified branding kicks off in Mexico, where Coke is still very popular. The company hasn't said when it might hit U.S. store shelves. In Chicago, I'm Nova Safo for Marketplace.
Does your credit card have a fingernail-sized chip glued into it? The switchover to more secure microchip-based cards was supposed to happen last October. Well, if the chip reader is even in service, it tends to add a few pregnant beats to the checkout time. Visa said yesterday it's working on a way to make this quicker. I got Marketplace's senior tech correspondent Molly Wood on the line from Northern California to do a six-month check-in on these things.
Only about 20% of retailers actually have bought the new terminals and are using them. Another 30% have bought the new terminals, but there is apparently a very complicated certification process that they have to go through, all this red tape and paperwork. And it's backed up because of everybody trying to switch at once. So that leaves, of course, the other half who aren't even getting involved. They're just not even bothering right now.
I have used mine. at a couple places. I assume because it has the chip, that transaction is more secure against evil hackers.
Well, the security is definitely a question. There are a lot of security experts who say that the U.S. has already failed in implementing chip cards because we haven't implemented the chip and PIN system. So in Europe, they have these cards with chips in them, but then you put in a PIN code as sort of a double layer of verification. That's optional in the U.S., and most people, unless it's a debit card where you always use a PIN code, most retailers aren't requiring a PIN. So anytime you're using a chip but not a chip and PIN, you're not necessarily that much more secure, especially considering that 80% of us are still just using the swipe method.
All right, so where does this go next year, Molly?
This is a behavior that we've been doing for decades, swiping our cards. And so the behavior is going to have to change. Probably the second generation of terminals are going to be better. You know, a year from now, it'll probably be a lot easier. But there are so many competing methods for payment that I actually think we'll be paying with our phones before we really, most of us, end up getting super used to chip cards. Because I got to say, I will take the Apple Pay experience over the chip card experience 9 times out of 10. So much easier.
Eventually, the chip will be embedded in us and we'll have to wave a thing.
Now that's what I'm waiting for. I'm all over it.
Marketplace's senior tech correspondent, Molly Wood in San Francisco. Thank you.
My pleasure.
You ever hear the sound many of these chip card readers make to signal mission accomplished, take your card out? It's like a losing game show buzzer. I always feel like I've somehow failed. Take your card. Sorry. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.